said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome, welcome everybody to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. My name is Karen Watts, also known as Karen at petoftheday.com. And we have with us, of course, Country Joe himself, Joe Barber.
I'm right here. And we have who today, Karen, to start us?
To start us off, we have someone different. He is, now we've talked about chickens, we've talked about pigeons, we've talked about turkeys.
Pheasants.
but we are now going to talk to David Holdereed, and he does ducks and geese.
Oh.
He is Holdereed Waterfowl Farm and Preservation Center. Is that correct, David?
That is right.
Wow. That's different.
Yeah, it says conserving rare breeds of domestic ducks and geese from around the world.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, what are some of the rare ducks that we don't know of?
Well, hopefully you know of most of them now that we've been doing this for as many years as we've been doing it. Some of the breeds that we've introduced to North America are the Saxony duck,
yep,
the silver appleyard duck, both in the large form, which weigh generally 8 to 10 pounds, and the bantam form that are more around a pound and a half to pound and three quarters, up to 2 pounds. The Ancona duck, most people think of Anconas as being chickens, but there was also a breed of duck developed that went by the same name.
Yeah, what about the Welsh Harlequin? I'm looking at that. That's critical.
Yep, the Welsh Harlequin is another one. We didn't actually introduce those. A fellow by the name of Jack Fugate originally imported them in 1968. We got involved with him and the breed about 1982, if I remember correctly.
How did you get involved in being a duck person in the first place, ducks and geese?
Well, my parents told me that I was crazy about animals in general from the time I was an infant. And they said if they took me to a zoo where there were ponds or a park where there were ponds and there were ducks and geese there and they would go to leave, I would start crying.
Wow. Well,
it must have been in my genetics.
Sounds it.
And then in third grade, my third grade teacher brought two ducklings to school, had them in the classroom for a few weeks, and then had us write a paper on them, and she claimed that the person that wrote the best paper would got them. I doubt if I actually wrote the best paper. I think she was watching and seeing who was most interested.
She knew that you already had a duck-shaped spot in your heart.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And then what, and I, as a boy, I raised ducks and geese and chickens and turkeys and pheasants and quail, and I had a lot of pigeons. I raced pigeons, homing pigeons,
wow,
and I had show pigeons, and I had performing pigeons, and I had other animals. And but I was asked to go to Puerto Rico, and it was a federal government program, and to teach vocational poultry there. And that was, I actually arrived there when I was 20 years old. And so I did that for 4 years. And in that setting, one of the things we did was we were looking for birds that would perform well there in terms of producing meat and eggs. And so we tried chickens. Well, we tried all the species of domestic birds that are regularly used for meat or eggs. And the ducks and geese, by far, were the least susceptible to the diseases in that tropical setting. So when my wife and I returned to the States, and while we were there, we had a hard time. We realized some of the old breeds that even in the 1960s, were still readily available, had become almost impossible to find.
Mm-hmm.
So when we came back, we dedicated ourselves to, we originally only worked with, in the preservation part, with two or three breeds, and then it just snowballed from there.
Wow, amazing.
You know, as Joe is someone who is into rare breeds of chickens, I can tell you he knows exactly how that happens. You think you're happy, and then you find out about a new breed or an old breed that needs saving. And
that's it. That's what happens. Then it just mushrooms. Just goes crazy from there. What are some of the rare geese? That'd be an interesting one to talk about, rare geese.
Well, one of the interesting things about geese is that probably started in the 1800s. A lot of the breeds that they had in Europe, some of them were brought over to the U.S. and to Canada. But I'll give the example of the white Emden. Most of the birds in this country that are called Emdens are not Emdens.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the breeds we work quite a bit with are Emdens, and some people are kind of startled and say, well, they're not rare. Well, there's very few birds in this country called Emdens that are really Emdens. It became the kind of the norm. Any white goose that did not have a knob on its forehead was called an Emden. And it's fairly well documented that a lot of the birds that, you know, from about 1900 to up until present, were actually Roman geese, or at least crosses with Roman geese. And for some reason, if they put the label of Emden on them, they sold better. And so there's a fair number of the breeds that we tend to think of as fairly common that actually are very rare because the authentic bloodlines are so rare. So we have the true, very tall, large Emdens. The true
I was
African.
Gonna ask, what's the difference between the Emdens and the Romans?
A lot of it was size. The Emdens, the true Emdens, the true Emdens were kind of the festival bird of the wealthier people in Great Britain. Just kind of one way to sum it up. They tended to be very large, and they wanted them to, when they were dressed, to mimic basically a swan.
But
swans were harder to reproduce, and they were harder to procure.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted really large birds that they could pass off as a swan.
Well, you know, and we're running out of time for this segment, but I will say that that makes sense because as a person who's been through art school, a lot of the old paintings you see, you know, something that looks like a swan on the table, but it makes sense that it's probably a goose, like you say, an Emden dressed up to look like a swan. Because, you know, once it's cooked, nobody's checking bloodlines. We are running out of time for this segment. David, will you stick with us?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
Excellent. We'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show, talking about ducks and geese here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial. No sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat-treated to help retain all the natural, rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 33955. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We are talking with a gentleman who does rare geese and duck conservation. And so we were talking about some of the geese, and I know, Joe, you had another goose that you wanted to talk about.
Well, yeah, I was looking at the Pilgrim group, a goose. There was a rare one in the Pomeranian. That one looked really different. I had no idea there was one until, you know, a few minutes ago.
We're familiar with Pomeranian dogs, but tell us about the Pomeranian goose.
Well, the one that is here in the U.S. are what are called saddlebacks. And what that means is the birds have a colored head and part of their upper neck is colored.
Right.
And then the shoulders are colored and there's kind of a belt that goes around their middle that you don't really see because it goes on the underbody. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very striking colored bird. That pattern is quite variable. So when you hatch babies from them, you get, you know, the pattern ends up being more like you get some that almost look like a pinto horse. Blotchy. But the ideal pattern that people have decided is ideal can be a little bit tricky to breed. The old time breeders, they would raise lots of babies and they would pick out the top 10% or so to save for breeders, and the rest of them they would send to the processor to be butchered.
Wow. So those were popular at one time, were they?
I wouldn't say they were ever popular here. They were more so in Germany. In Germany, they also had solid white ones, solid gray ones. It had to do, here we think of it associated with a very specific color pattern. In Germany, it was just birds that came from the Pomerania area of Germany, and they had all colors. A lot of colors.
Well, the picture that I'm looking at, you know, the neck, the head and the neck is like a brownish color, and then it's a white basic body, but like you say, with the saddle going around.
Right. That'd be the saddleback pattern. And that's the only variety really recognized here.
Now, do people show geese and ducks like they show? I know people show chickens and horses and dogs and cats.
Yes. Yeah, it's quite common. Geese are more of a challenge because of their size. And so just transporting them to shows is much more of a challenge than a chicken or a duck. But people definitely do it.
Now, I have to say that most geese I have been in the company of are not, how shall I put this, the friendliest around. Is that true of all geese, or just I've met the ones who really just as likely snap your finger off than say hello?
Well, you've run into the juvenile delinquents. Mm-hmm. Keep anywhere from 400 to 500 geese here at a time.
Wow.
And there's not a bird on the place that we have five people that do our regular chores, including myself. Mm-hmm. There's not a goose on the place that we think anything about that cause any issues.
Wow.
One of the reasons I enjoy geese so much is I say that you have to be thinking when you're working with them. And you've got to be aware of what's going on. One of the fascinating things I've found is people that work well with horses work well with geese, almost universally.
Wow.
And,
that's interesting.
If you think of the goose as a small feathered horse, you'll get along with them well. You have to teach them that they should not approach you unless you invite them in.
Ah.
And so they're very intelligent, and that's where people get in trouble with them. And if they if they ever think that they've chased you off, they'll never forget it.
Well, the next thing that occurred to me is, the geese that I'm thinking of, you know, the goose that Tommy had and the goose over at so-and-so's house, do they do better in flocks? Because both of these geese that I knew well enough to keep fingers away from were solitary male geese.
You hit a very important part or a very important point. Geese are very social. And if they do not have companionship, they can get very neurotic.
Wow. Yeah, because I had one goose here. I had one goose here. And, he was really, really bad. And finally, I ended up giving him to a lady that had other geese, and she absolutely loves them. And when he was here, we never got along. So Gary went.
Well, maybe he, you know, just wanted to hang out with other geese. And I'm sorry, Joe, you don't match the pattern.
He did, because he didn't care about hanging around with the chickens. So, and I found a lady, like I said, who had other geese, and now he is happy, happy, happy. So off he went. So I understand that part, and that was my only experience with a goose.
Now, do you have to have a pond or a big water source to be able to raise geese and ducks?
You do not. Just as long as they have a source of drinking water, at least all day long. I recommended that they have water available day and night. We've actually done a lot of work, and a lot of our birds now do not have water at night, which makes keeping their night quarters cleaner a lot easier.
Now, how many geese do you have on your farm or on your place?
Well, depends on the time of year if we're raising young ones and stuff. Usually we keep somewhere between 400 to 600.
Wow, that's amazing. When I used to live in Vermont, there was a farmer up there that had Canadian geese, and they used to fly south, and they'd always come back to his pond in the spring. And I found that really fascinating. And that was really interesting. And they'd raise a little brood of geese every year, and they'd fly off in the fall. Or in the winter.
Some of those flocks of Canadas like that were actually remnants of decoy flocks that back when market hunting was common, the hunters would wound geese, bring them back, put them on their pond so they could use them as live decoys, and then they'd let them reproduce there, and then it was fairly common for them to migrate.
Yeah, that was interesting, and they were really, really ugly. I mean, they'd chase you off, hissing, and the whole – I remember that. I was really young, and they always used to say, don't go near the geese. But they were so pretty, you know.
And I know you as someone who you know, has feathered critters in your heart, you wanted to pet the geese. I know
I did.
You did.
I did. Boy, they'd come right after you. You know, especially when they had the young ones. But I found it fascinating. In the fall, the farmer would say all of a sudden there'd be a flock going over, and they just would join in, and they were gone, and that was it. But they always came back. You know, that was interesting.
Even the wild ones that go to wild areas to nest, They typically go sometimes within yards of where they were hatched to nest.
That's amazing.
Huh, and it's like everybody gets the memo at the same time.
Yeah.
and do they, have they figured out yet whether it's the amount of daylight or what causes birds to migrate?
There's been a lot of work done on that, and they keep developing their theories a little tighter and tighter, but I know that we have a subspecies of Canada goose that winters right here in our area. The whole population winters in our valley. And a friend of mine was the lead biologist that studied them for years. He's retired now. But he always told me, you can set your spring calendar on the day that these birds leave.
Wow.
And so ever since he told me that, I watch them, and sure enough, the only exception is if there's a real bad storm mm-hmm. coming through, mm-hmm. it can delay it a day or two. But
well, you know,
other than that, basically the same day of the year they leave. So they think that light is certainly a major,
major part of it
for that.
We are out of time for this segment. Dave, we'll have you back with the next segment, and folks, we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Attention all pet lovers! Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust mites and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's PAWSNSILK.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Now, we still have with us David Holderreed from Oregon, where he works with conserving rare ducks and geese. And, you know, you had mentioned the Roman goose.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right. Well, they were probably the most common white goose in North America, I should say, in the late 1800s and early 1900s. But for some reason, they sold better if they were called Emdens. And so once larger hatcheries started developing and birds were shipped by rail, a lot of those flocks of Romans magically turned into Emdens by name. And then there was a lot of crossbreeding, too. And unfortunately, there's very few what are considered true Romans left. And so now they're considered a very rare breed in North America.
Now, are there still Romans in Europe that could maybe be brought over to help extend that? Or are they sort of been crossbred over there, too?
There still are mm-hmm. Romans there, and we actually bred, there's two forms of Romans, those that have a tuft on their head and those that don't. The ones that do not have the tuft are the original, at least most people consider them the original form. We had birds that were imported by a breeder in Canada from Great Britain, and we had those British birds here for years. We've actually discontinued them because they laid, basically they'd start laying the end of December, and they were pretty well done by March. And our weather here was such that it made it hard for us to incubate those eggs, and fertility often because of our weather wasn't very good. So we've actually, we sold our breeding stock to a farm in California where their springs are, well, winters are milder.
Right. Now, where did the tuft come in on some of these, and you say, and the originals didn't, the tuft on their head, you know?
There's a lot of disagreement of where that came from. There was another European breed that had a tuft on their head, and some people think that they actually, what we call tufted Romans, is a misnomer, and they're a totally different breed. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. We do have the tufted Romans, and they're very similar to the plain-headed Romans, except for that tuft.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people have geese, do they generally have them for egg production or for meat production or for pets? Or why do people normally keep geese?
Meat would be very common. Pets would be very common. People like to have a bird that's a little different. And if they like the challenge of being able to relate to a very intelligent bird, there's just a certain segment of country folks that really seem to enjoy geese. Another thing that they're very, very good for is, in fact, I often say, I would never consider raising ducks where we are without geese. They provide a lot of protection. It's not 100%, but from hawks, eagles, owls, we've done some research projects in terms of exposing ducks at night in areas where there's horned owls and having them with geese, and the geese really do help.
Hmm.
I've mentioned this before on the show. There's actually a sewage treatment plant out in the middle of Massachusetts where they got sheep to sort of to mow the grass between the beds that they have for doing the treatment. And it turned out that the sheep were getting harassed by dogs till they got a pair of geese. And they got these big white geese, and the dogs don't come anywhere near the sheep anymore. So the sheep, the geese are the sheepdogs for the sewage treatment plant.
And, right. And geese
can be very effective protecting chickens. We have a fair number here in our valley. We have a lot of people that are raising poultry, pastured poultry for commercial production. And we have a lot of hawks, and geese with the chickens has been very successful at reducing or totally eliminating losses to hawks.
Now, are they active at night? You talked about owls. So the geese sound like they're active at night.
If you have two or more geese, there's always one of them awake.
Oh.
Huh.
Wow, that's amazing.
So there's one guard goose if there's another sleeping.
Yeah.
Correct. And they have fairly good night vision. Maybe not as good as some of your nocturnal mammals, but it's fairly good.
And of course, better than ours. And we all know, because we can hear even Canada geese flying overhead when they're honking.
Yeah.
There's no question when a goose is raising the alarm.
Correct.
That's amazing.
Now, you said, you know, maybe sometimes 500 to 600 geese and ducks. Does it get really, really noisy, or are they fairly quiet when they're happy?
And that was just geese. We have about the same number of ducks. You know, one of the comments we often get when people come here, they say, why don't we hear any birds? And I say, my common response is, when ducks and geese are happy and content and full, they don't make much noise. Now, in the morning when we go out and they know it's feeding time, it can get a bit noisy. They're happy to see it.
Hey, David, how would somebody get a hold of you if they wanted to, you know, if they had any questions or wanted to buy geese from you?
Yeah, we're getting down to the end of this segment. Yep. So do you want to give people your website?
I'd be glad to do that. It's just Holdereed Farm, and that's Holdereed Farm, and that's all one word, .com.
And excellent. I know the phone number is right there on the website, but why don't you give our listeners that as well?
Okay. It'd be 1-541-929-5338.
Okay. Excellent. We are out of time for this segment, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah.
You know, we've never talked this much about geese and ducks ever in a show, and we will have you back sometime because I know Joe really wants to talk about runner ducks.
I do.
Thanks so much.
Runner's one of my favorites.
Good.
Excellent. We'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Our dogs are part of our family, an integral part of our lives, providing comfort, exercise, and companionship. All too often, however, this relationship is tested through dog naughtiness and general poor behavior. Our dog does not come when called, digs the garden, and many other issues that create frustration and a break in the relationship we seek. You love him, but you don't like him. Today's e-collars, remote trainers, have been developed to help you train your dog and overcome these issues that can result in separation from the family and worse. E-collar technology has been developed to help the everyday dog owner. Collars that set limit on the levels of stimulation and therefore limiting mistakes. If you seek a training aid that will assist you overcome the unwanted issues, e-collar technology products have developed dog training technology for the modern world that uses the lowest levels of distractive stimulus to improve behavior and reduce stress. www.ecollar.com. That's www.ecollar.com.
Has your life gone to the dogs? Are you at your wit's end? We can help. At America's Canine Academy, our specialists can put an end to the mutt mayhem and magically stop the destructive behaviors that your crazed canine has developed. We offer step-by-step guidance and make sense techniques that will turn your problem dog into a calm, stable, and well-behaved companion. And we can even do it all by phone. Even from afar, we can assess a dog-gone-wrong situation and help you recapture your sanity. Call 877-WE-WHISPER, americascanineacademy.net, where dog whisperers are trained.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now, introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit biketoeleash.com. That's biketoeleash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is biketoeleash.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We have our next guest with us, Alan Smith from the Heritage Poultry Conservancy. Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show, Alan.
Hi, Karen.
Yes, and we wanted to hear about your – and first of all, I want to tell you, I watch on PBS all the time. And
oh, you do? Thank you, Joe.
And I do. Yes, I do. And I did see when you were building your house and you showed your new chicken coop, I was all excited. You know, I was watching that.
What did you get excited about, Joe? What part of it that
how
made
nice
you so excited?
It was so well built and so much thought that had gone into that chicken house.
Well,
that's what I
you.
Liked about it.
Well, I've gone over the top, and we've built another one since then, and you'll see it on shows coming up. We call it my brother calls it the Red Roof Inn for chickens. Some call it the Poultry Palace. It's 135 feet long and has 24 pens in there for our different breeds.
I know. I could live in there. My God, when I saw that, I went, holy.
Well, we've had some graduate students from the university who said, they love chickens so much, they'd love to have a bunk in that barn. So I know what you mean.
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting that I just wanted to mention to you that I'm building out here for my chickens. Well, it's fairly new to me. I don't know, you've heard of fodder, where you grow sunflower and other plants.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm going to. I'm going to pure organic.
And, all right.
And so that's my new hobby here. So
well, that's wonderful. If you have a lot of chickens, you need a lot of room to be able to do that, to rotate them around.
Yes, I do. And, we grow it in a grow house, and then we feed them. They're all cage-free. And we're going to be growing it and feeding them daily, out of this. And because I wanted them to be all organic, everything organic.
Sure. So, what type breeds do you raise?
Okay, what I have here is called Golden Buff for my layers. Mm-hmm. And then we do raise the meat turkeys, which are just the white meat turkeys. And I also raise Red Rangers, which are the meat chickens. That's one separate. And then I do raise the Cornish Rock also. So that's basically the three breeds. And then I have my pen where I have my rare chickens. I love rare chickens, like the black white face Spanish, the Golden Campines. And
sure.
The real unusual chickens. Those are my fun, my toys.
And
so
and
that,
those
that's
are the breeds that we're focused on with the Heritage Poultry Conservancy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I was just gonna ask you.
Tell people about that.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear.
Well, the HPC was founded in 2008, and it's about preserving these great old breeds that existed, were popular in the 18th and 19th centuries, some of them in the early 20th centuries. A lot of these breeds are now out of work, as we like to say, and have become breeds with needs. They need homes. And there are very few breeders for some of these. For instance, golden penciled Hamburgs and silver penciled Hamburgs, finding mm-hmm. outstanding examples of those breeds is very difficult these days. You mentioned white-faced black Spanish. Mm-hmm. Those are also very rare in terms of really good quality ones that meet the standard of perfection criteria. So these heritage breeds are recognized by the standard of the American Poultry Association and in the standard of perfection. Some of them are not included, for instance, Spitzhobbins and some of the other European breeds that aren't necessarily recognized. They're also heritage by definition. Mm-hmm. But these are all breeds that many of us know the names from, growing up, Rhode Island Reds, mm-hmm. Silver-Laced Wyandottes, New Hampshire Reds, all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And those are considered heritage birds, but some of them are in, they're rarer or are challenged by their population. The ALBC, the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, has a rating where they sort of give you an idea of whether that breed is on a critical list or threatened or on the watch list. And mm-hmm. so what we've tried to do is raise awareness for those breeds that are on the critical list. Like
now, here's a big question I've always had for you. What is your favorite breed? Everybody has a favorite breed. I know they do.
Well, I really like a lot of different breeds. I love Bantams, but we're focused strictly on large fowl because those are the ones that seem to be struggling the most because they're mm-hmm. more expensive to take care of and you need more room for them. But if I was only allowed to choose a couple of breeds, I really love Blue Andalusians.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm crazy about silver-laced Wyandottes.
Oh.
And I love silver gray Dorkings. So those uh-huh. would be up at the top. And two of those are pretty rare.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. what's the rarest of the breeds you're conserving?
Probably, Karen, in terms of breeds that we have that meet the standard of perfection in terms of their size and weight. Now, there are a lot of these out there, but they don't necessarily meet the standard in terms mm-hmm. of size and type. Probably the rarest is the silver gray Dorking. There are very few of them in this country that come up to the size that they were in the 19th century.
Uh-huh.
Probably another very rare one is the Blue Andalusian, where the lacing on it goes all the way to the very back of the bird,
mm-hmm.
and the tail feathers are all laced just as they're supposed to be, and that the bird is the right size. Uh-huh. You can find Blue Andalusians out there, but the ones that really meet the standard and are considered, you know, finely bred, those are difficult to find as well. Also,
you know,
Partridge Wyandottes are very difficult, and Partridge Rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've never heard of Partridge Rocks. What makes them different from the other, you know, the Cornish Rocks and the other rocks that we've heard of?
Well, a Cornish Rock is a cross between Plymouth Rocks and Cornish.
Mm-hmm.
But the Plymouth Rock comes in multiple colors. There are white Plymouth Rocks and barred Plymouth Rocks, probably the two most commonly known. And then they come in other feather patterns. And one of those is the Partridge pattern. You see it in Cochins. You see it in Wyandottes and so forth. And
mm-hmm.
So we have Partridge Plymouth Rocks. And we hope to be working on silver penciled rocks.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and you know, I'm going to not let Joe ask this question because we're running out of time for this segment. Alan, this is what I do that drives Joe crazy. Will you stick with us?
Yes, absolutely.
I know Joe probably has 10 years worth of questions to ask you, but I'm not going to let him ask one more now. Folks, we'll be right back with Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And if you wanted to listen to the show anytime, you can go to countryjoeschickenshow.com. And we're also, the website for All Paws Pet Talk is allpaws, P-A-W-S, pettalk.com. And there's a form right there on the homepage if you have any questions for Joe or any of our guests or anyone on All Paws or Country Joe's.
And folks, we're also on iTunes, too. Don't forget that one.
Yes, and we're on iTunes now, too. And there's only a few weeks' worth of shows, but it's going to be going on and on and on.
Yeah.
Every time we have a new show, it'll be up on iTunes. So that's very exciting for us. Folks, we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
Is your dog a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Now through Labor Day, save 20% on Super Gravy and all Clear Conscience Pet treats at Pet Food Warehouse in South Burlington and Shelburne.
I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We are talking with Alan Smith from the Heritage Poultry Conservancy. Now, how many chickens do you raise yourself there at the conservancy?
That was my question.
Oh, well, you know, chickens are a bit of a disease. I think once you get started in them, you just can't stop, or at least that's been the case with me.
We have
not only chickens, we have other forms of poultry. We have four breeds of geese. We have Toulouse, we have the gray and the buff, the giant dewlap Toulouse, and we have Sebastopols and Saddleback Pomeranians.
Oh,
and
wow.
With turkeys, we have Black Spanish and we have Blue Slates.
Mm-hmm.
And with ducks, we have Aylesberries and White Muscovies and Rowans. And with chickens, we have about, I think, 18 or 19 breeds, but then probably an additional 5 or 6 strains of those different breeds. And we really try to focus on improving the vigor and the fertility and the size and the type of these breeds that we've chosen. And the ones we've chosen really have either come out of nostalgia, in the case of Plymouth Rocks and Wyandottes, because those were raised by my family as far back as the 19th century. The others really are breeds that we've come to understand are in trouble. There just aren't many breeders of them out there anymore. So we have dark Brahmas, for instance. We have blue white-faced Spanish and Crevecoeurs. Working on Crevecoeurs and trying to get them back up to the size they were at the end of the 19th century.
Uh-huh. Now, another breed that I've been trying to get here is red caps. That's I haven't got them yet.
Well, Joe, that's another old one that I think you've identified one that is an example of what we're talking about. They're just really difficult to find. I know a lot of hatcheries carry some of these breeds. But the hatchery's focus is different than a breeder's focus.
Hatchery is about
providing, you know, numbers of chicks to a population that's very interested in them. And they do a great job of getting chicks out that help satisfy that need. But in terms of trying to maintain, a strong genetic bloodline that represents what we see in the standard of perfection, that's really not what they do. And
that's right.
So it's really incumbent upon breeders around the country who will focus on these breeds generation after generation to make sure that these their genetic material is preserved.
That's why I joined the Rare Chicken Club with Craig Russell, because that's just what they focus on exactly.
Right.
Exactly that.
Well, it's so important that this occurs. And we hope with the Heritage Poultry Conservancy that we can raise awareness by talking to folks such as you and being on your show, that there are breeds out there that really need serious work and that we need people who want to dedicate time and energy and resources to, you know, working on these breeds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if someone was going to get into chickens for the first time, you know, they've thought about being a chicken person for a long time, would it be okay for them to start with one of the rare breeds, or would that be something?
Well, that's a good question, Karen. You know, I think the hatcheries do a good job of providing birds for people who just want to have some around, you know, because they do have beautiful birds, and they lay well, and they're vigorous and healthy. Sometimes I think that's maybe the best way to go, just to get started with some chickens and then decide what breed you want, really understand what it takes to take care of them. And once the training wheels come off, then I think you could focus on some really good breeds. I would hate for someone to spend a lot of time and money and get a really great strain of chicken that's probably very rare, and then something go wrong and they lose them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Now, do you hatch your own also?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Our incubators are full. We've got chicks hatching right now. We have buff Minorcas that are actually hatching today.
Wow. Yeah, that's I do that too. You know, I've got my incubators are going.
Good.
Down here in Florida, you know, as soon as this little cold snap goes, you know, then we can get them outdoors.
But, that's great. That's great. Do you raise any bantams?
No bantams. All mine are like I say, my next victims, I call them, are red caps. But I also want to get I've always been fascinated with the Malays, you know, the roosters, you know, the big
right. Some of those oriental breeds are fascinating, and they played an important role in the breeding of a lot of breeds that are very popular today. For instance, the Cornish back in the 18th century really came from some of those oriental breeds, those game chickens, and crossing them.
Right.
And now they play an important role in our food production system.
Wow. Now, do you sell your chickens off from the farm to people? Or?
We do two poultry workshops a year, Joe and Karen. We do one in the spring. This year it'll be on the 12th of April. We have it at our farm, Moss Mountain Farm. Information can be found on my website. That's pallensmith.com.
Right.
pallensmith.com. And we will sell birds there. We'll sell examples of a lot of the birds that I've been talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have one in the fall. We have one in September. And we usually have about 250 to 300 people there. We have representatives from the University of Arkansas. It's really a great time. And people tour the farm. They see our heritage poultry collection. They can get involved with the Heritage Poultry Conservancy. We feed them lunch. We have a great lineup of speakers, and we also have poultry for sale, which is, in some cases, is the most popular part because people want to come
sure.
buy Buff Orpingtons and Silver Spangled Spitzhoppens and so forth.
Well, why don't you tell us how they can join the Conservancy? You know,
you can just go online to our website. It's heritagepoultryconservancy.org, and you can see where you can sign up. We raise money each year to give away at three major shows in the country, mainly to the youth programs. For instance, we were at the National Show in Ohio in November, and we gave over $2,000 in prize money away to the junior exhibitors.
Wow.
So we're a 501(c)(3) organization, 501(c)(3) organization.
C3.
And people can, thank you, C3 organization. So they get the tax deduction to write a check to us. And so any support we can get, it's always appreciated.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, we don't do a lot of research and we try to turn the money back into ways that will stimulate the next generation of poultry fanciers that hopefully will be focusing on some of these breeds that could really use some help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know that as much as Joe might want to go to the show, I have a feeling that his wife would not let him go because he'd be building more pens for more chickens.
Like I said, it's a very contagious disease.
It is. It is.
Karen, do you raise any particular varieties?
I actually do not have any myself. I have scars on my shin from where Aunt Shirley's rooster flew at me when I was 9.
Oh, I see.
And I'm in an apartment in the city right now, so we're working on getting chickens approved in the
good.
City of Waltham. I'm
well,
right outside of Boston, so
we'll
see how that goes. And, you know, gentlemen, I hate to tell you this, but we are running out of time for this week's show.
Well, it's been marvelous. Thank you all so much, and I hope you all come to pallensmith.com and check out what we've got going on, and hopefully we'll make a trip out our way and come to Moss Mountain Farm for a visit.
Hey, that sounds fun. It really does.
That sounds like a great time, but I think Joe's wife would make him leave his checkbook at home.
Boy.
folks, we'll be back next week with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show. And Joe, will you say it with me?
Oh, you're going to love this one. Are you ready? May the flock
be with you.